El Paso County Attorney Joanne Bernal hurries into the conference room. Her offices are on the fifth floor of the county courthouse. The windows look out at the tall mountains lording over the west side of the city. She takes a moment to get settled, places a manila folder on the desk in front of her, and then she offers me a Diet Coke.
Hi, I'm Joanne.
Hi,
Maria. Come on in.
We're here to talk to Joanne about what's inside of that folder. A number of the cases her office sees deal with domestic abuse. So an important part of her office's job is to file protective orders, which are like restraining orders. And that's actually how this whole thing started.
Just print it out.
Make sure that I remember my facts correctly.
In her hands, Joanne holds the case file of Estrella, who is referred to in the report as Irving Gonzalez. Estrella is a 35-year-old trans woman. And anyway, here's what happened.
In October of 2016, Ms. Gonzalez is the victim of an assault by her live-in boyfriend. She calls the police.
According to Joanne, Estrella and her boyfriend, Mario de Avila, got into a pretty heated argument.
The boyfriend slaps Ms. Gonzalez in the face, grabs her by the back of her hair, punches her.
She leaves town to get away from him. Then she comes back to El Paso close to New Year's, and she sees Mario, the boyfriend, again. They get into yet another fight.
He drags her from the home by her ponytail, punches her again. I think at this point is when he also kicked her. He got a knife from the kitchen, chased her outside with the knife.
So finally, in the new year, Estrella had had enough.
So she comes to this office. She applies for a protective order.
And Joanne takes her case. A date is set for Estrella's hearing.
We file the lawsuit and we have to serve her boyfriend.
Joanne's office tells Mario, the boyfriend, that a restraining order is being placed against him. He can't contact or get close to Estrella, at least while the case is pending. And here's where everything gets messy. Because Estrella isn't just someone filing for protection for domestic abuse. She's a delicate case, not just because she's trans. She's also undocumented. And she also has a criminal record. And that's what led immigration officers to do something that many consider to be crossing a line. They took Estrella from the courtroom. From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, the story of Estrella. And I'm joined by reporter Jonathan Hirsch. Hey, Jonathan.
Hi, Maria.
So we've traveled to El Paso together.
Right.
And for people who don't know, El Paso is on the Texas-Mexico border right across from Juarez. Mm-hmm. It's a majority Latino city. It does have a large immigrant population, but it's definitely, like, you know, pretty Latino-centric.
And so we came to investigate a case that has become somewhat well-known, at least, you know, for people who are watching immigration closely. It's been cited as an example of how immigration officers are becoming more aggressive in how they make detentions under the Trump administration and how they're taking action to go beyond previously established norms.
Right. That is the case of Estrella Gonzalez. But before we talk more about that case, we really wanted to let you know more about Estrella herself, because her life story is pretty intense. And here's a warning. It involves some graphic violence, so you might not want children to hear. And also, heads up that there is some sensitive language in this episode.
Estrella's case has been reported on pretty extensively, but we were given an exclusive by Estrella herself. Her account of what happened in her voice hasn't been heard until now. So when we meet her for the first time, we're at this jail facility in downtown El Paso. You can hear the guards removing her shackles.
Sorry, didn't mean to.
Estrella is wearing one of those black and white striped prison outfits. She's 35 years old. She grew up in Acapulco, in Mexico. When she was a teenager, she basically called herself a gay boy. But really, from her earliest memories, she says she always identified privately as a woman. And almost immediately when we started talking, Estrella becomes really emotional as soon as she starts talking about her struggles with her sexuality as a young person in Mexico.
¿Cómo se deja de ser homosexual? Yo quisiera saber.
How does one stop being gay? Stray asks. How can you rip that from inside your body? She says. I don't want to be a man. I never wanted to be a man. I've always wanted to be a woman.
Nunca he querido ser hombre. Nunca, nunca he querido ser hombre. Yo he querido ser mujer.
Growing up in Mexico, her mom worked two jobs as a nurse. She was raised mostly by her grandmother, and as a teenager, she had a boyfriend. Her grandmother found out about it, and she said she beat her. Her mom came home crying one day, she remembers, fearing for her child's life.
Papi, te van a matar cuando sepan que eres homosexual.
Papi, Estrella's mom said, they're going to kill you if they find out you're gay. So Estrella kept quiet about her identity and her sexuality in order to save face. But people talked. Her mom was worried about how some people in their neighborhood might feel about someone like Estrella.
That didn't stop Estrella from pursuing relationships with other men. She did it like many others in her position, in secret. Well, kind of in secret. And then one day, her mom's nightmares did come true. Estrella was enrolled in nursing school in Acapulco, and most days her boyfriend would pick her up from classes.
But one day, he didn't show up.
Yo me vine en el camión.
So she came home on the bus, and on her way home, she got some flowers and chocolate as a gift for her mom. She stopped at a park where she and her boyfriend would often meet. Then a man approached her in the park.
Y luego se acerca otro.
Then another, and then another.
They grabbed her by the neck, pushed her up against a tree.
Me dice, joto, maldito, puto, maricón. No, no, era horrible.
Called her queer, faggot, stabbed her in the leg three times. One of them sliced off the tip of her thumb. She lifts her hand to show us the scars.
So I'm looking at her thumb. ¿Cuántos años tenías, mamita?
18 años.
She was just about to turn 18.
Estrella knew something had to change, so she decided to come to the U.S. She fled the country as a teenager and moved to Los Angeles, began living a double life as a straight male. She got married to a woman, had two kids. But her life in the U.S. quickly unraveled. She struggled to keep her sexuality hidden from her family, and her relationship was fraying. At one point, she found out that her wife was cheating on her with her best friend.
Ahí sí hubo golpes, María. Ahí sí.
Things started to get so bad between Estrella and her wife that they physically came to blows.
Sí, yo la golpeé. Fui 6 meses presa al condado.
Yes, I beat her, says Estrella. The police were called and Estrella was charged with assault. She spent 6 months in a Los Angeles County jail. She and her wife split up.
After she got out of jail, that's when things really started to turn for Estrella. She's deported to Mexico after serving her sentence, and then she makes her way back to California. She wants to see her kids.
Conozco un cholo, un pandillero, y me enamoro de él.
And at this point, she says she fell in love with a member of a gang in Long Beach, California. This gang member was running a prostitution ring, and eventually he convinced Estrella to work for him. And it's also around this time that Estrella starts writing hot checks.
And that meant that she started stealing checks out of the mail and falsely cashing them or changing the names on the checks.
So this was not a safe situation for her. She feared for her life if she were to try to escape her gang member boyfriend.
In fact, they said that they would kill everyone in Estrella's family if she tried to leave.
But she did eventually escape to Mexico, and then she tried to re-enter the U.S. again, and that's when immigration officials caught her and charged her with criminal re-entry.
She spent some time in prison in West Texas, where she meets and falls in love with Mario de Ávila, the man Estrella calls her huge mistake.
Mario, mi gran error.
In jail, she said, he was obsessed with her.
After they get out, Mario and Estrella move in together in El Paso. Estrella finds a job on the Far East Side, babysitting a child with special needs.
Estrella says she hoped to start something of a clean life when she got out of prison. It's Mario, she says, that insisted that they continue to write hot checks. And soon, Mario becomes abusive.
He'd make her get permission to go to the store or take a shower. If she complained, he'd threaten to call immigration on her. Estrella sent her friend a video of Mario one night, in case something were to happen to her, so there would be record of his threats against her. The friend sent us this video.
Mario, me estás lastimando. Me estás lastimando.
The video is dark. You can't see much, but you can hear Estrella telling the man in the video to stop, that he's hurting her. How many times have you already threatened me with death? She says. Several, he responds. You can hear Estrella telling him to stop threatening her life. You know I don't threaten, he says. I keep my promises.
In December of 2016, things got so bad between Estrella and Mario that she finally wanted to leave him. That night, she told him she wanted out of the relationship. She says he went crazy. He chased her around their trailer with a knife. Then he put a tank of gasoline outside the trailer and threatened to blow the house up with her in it.
Estrella said she felt like she had no choice but to leave, and she feared for her life. And even if Mario's death threats were empty, he did say he would call immigration on her. Eventually, she does escape Mario, goes to Los Angeles for a little bit.
But then she starts to worry that her criminal past is going to catch up with her. Somebody tells her that Mario is blaming the hot checks on a close friend of Estrella's, and she doesn't want to get them in trouble. So she decides to return to El Paso with the plan, she says, to turn herself in. And this is why Estrella files that protective order with Joan Bernal at the El Paso County Attorney's Office, where we started our story.
So on January 26, 2017, Estrella is interviewed by Joanne's staff. She says they told her not to be afraid, that she's a victim of abuse, and she'll be safe to enter the protective order courtroom.
But she wasn't safe there. That's coming up. Stay with us. No te vayas.
It's summer movie season, and Pop Culture Happy Hour has got you covered. They're predicting hits and flops, telling you what they're looking forward to, and helping you spend that ticket money wisely. Available right now from Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Welcome back. Today, I'm with reporter Jonathan Hirsch talking about the story of Estrella Gonzalez. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, Maria.
So at this point in this story, Estrella has filed a protective order against her ex-boyfriend, Mario.
Mm-hmm.
And legally, he's actually got to be informed of exactly why she is asking for this order to be filed. And Joan Bernal, the county attorney, tells us that they also have to tell Mario the details of the court hearing. Very specifically.
Well, you can't get a protective order unless the other side knows where you're going to be. So that morning, the case is set for hearing, I think, at 9 o'clock in the morning.
That morning, February 9th, 2017, at 9 a.m., when Estrella entered the lobby of the El Paso County Courthouse, she took one of four elevators to the 10th floor.
And this is where we have different versions of the facts.
Joanne says two other key players also entered the building that morning. Two federal officers in plain clothes.
Yeah, they were members of the Border Patrol, but they were working as part of an interagency task force run by a division of ICE. Yeah, it's kind of confusing. Anyway, they're plainclothes immigration agents, and they walk into the courthouse.
They go to the receptionist and they say, where is the protective order courtroom? The receptionist doesn't think anything of it, tells them 10th floor. They leave.
At this point, there are two different versions of what happened next. One where the immigration agents do things completely by the book, and one where they do something that's pretty controversial.
Every time an apprehension is made, immigration officers have to release a statement saying the whens and wheres of the detention. In Estrella's case, that statement says that at 9:30 a.m. on February 9th, agents were stationed outside the courthouse. Quote, agents observed González exiting the El Paso County Courthouse and proceeded to walk along the sidewalk, unquote. It goes on to say they approached her outside, detained her, and took her into custody. So, in their version of events, the agents are staked out on the street and they approach Estrella only once she's outside the courthouse.
But that's not Joanne's version of what happened. She says that after the agents enter the courthouse, they go up to the 10th floor, enter the courtroom where Estrella is filing for the protective order, and then the agents take Estrella by the arm, lead her into the elevator, and escort her from the courthouse.
Where they are is a super important detail, because at the time of Estrella's apprehension, it was not customary for immigration officers to detain people in courthouses.
Right. Courthouses have long been considered by many to be one of the, quote, sensitive areas, like churches, schools, or hospitals. And there's an Obama-era memo that set this policy that agents should avoid these sensitive areas.
Now, technically, they can go into any of these kinds of spaces. It's not illegal. It's just not commonly done, because if federal agents are coming into a hospital to detain someone on life support, for example, well, it looks pretty bad.
Although courthouses weren't specifically mentioned in that Obama-era memo, officers often avoided entering courthouses because some judicial officials were against them doing so. They thought it could deter people from showing up to court or reporting crimes in the first place. Here's what El Paso's county judge at the time, Veronica Escobar, thought about immigration agents showing up to Estrella's hearing that day.
What was so shocking to us was that this place that was, quote unquote, almost like a sanctuary, right, which should be a safe haven for victims of sexual assault and domestic violence, where they can go and ask a judge for protection, that sitting in the audience were Border Patrol agents on this ICE task force waiting to apprehend her.
And so Estrella's case raises the question, why do the officers and the county attorney have different versions of what happened?
Joanne, the county attorney, wasn't there, but she's sure that the officer's version of events is not true. She knows they made the arrest inside the courthouse, and she knows that because she has the whole thing on tape.
You have that video.
Yes. So the two officers there, the jacket, and then the second one with the hat.
So this is an officer?
She stops the video, and you can see the officers in plain clothes approach Estrella, hold her tightly by the elbow, and move her into the elevator.
Okay.
So there is no doubt that this took place on the 10th floor, right outside of the courtroom. Right.
Another camera, positioned outside the courthouse, shows Estrella being escorted by the men into an unmarked van on San Antonio Avenue.
So to suggest that she wasn't in custody is insulting. This is a battered victim who is in so need of services and support. And what is it about her that precipitates this kind of response, right? Going to the courthouse, all of these agents in an unmarked car. I mean, to what end, right? To what end?
New information tonight about the transgender immigrant arrested at the El Paso County Courthouse last month.
ABC 7's Joey Carrera is live to talk about the legal fate of Irvin Gonzalez amid her state and federal charges.
Estrella's arrest in the courthouse quickly caught the local media's attention. The El Paso Times was the first outlet to surface the details of the video, which proved beyond any doubt that the agent who signed the statement, John Urquidy, had provided a false account of what happened that day.
So can you tell us your immediate reaction as a journalist when you heard the story of what happened with Irvin González?
The immediate reaction was I must have heard it wrong because it sounded so outrageous and, you know, beyond the norm of anything we'd grown to expect here.
This is Bob Moore. He was the editor of the El Paso Times when the paper broke the story.
And of course, it all comes at the beginning of the new Trump administration, and it's tied in with these other stories you hear around the country of, you know, norms being violated. And we have not developed any evidence that what happened here was part of a broader policy directive or change in policy. It really seems similar to what we're seeing elsewhere in the country, where you have immigration agents sort of taking it upon themselves to undo longstanding practices and policies. And that's perhaps even more disturbing than having policy changes that you could deal with, because you just have so much uncertainty.
When the news of the courthouse video broke, Beto O'Rourke, who was El Paso's state representative at the time, made an impassioned plea on the floor of the Texas State Senate. He said the Trump administration should send a strong message to immigration enforcement agencies that courthouse arrests threaten the safety and security of the community.
We will not continue to contribute to the safety of the United States and to the state of Texas if people don't feel comfortable reporting domestic abuse, reporting crimes, that it is imperative for the safety and security of this country and every person who is in this country, that we respect all people of all communities, regardless of their immigration status.
ICE has not provided to the public any statements explaining why the documents initially reported false information.
Their statement about the incident says that, quote, CBP and ICE take all allegations involving agent officer conduct and integrity very seriously and hold their personnel to the highest standards of professionalism and personal conduct, end quote.
Shortly after O'Rourke's statements, the congressman, Joanne Bernal, and El Paso's county judge sat down privately with ICE officials to discuss the details of Estrella's case. ICE representatives are reported to have promised an internal investigation. Several months later, reports indicated that the U.S. District Attorney had declined to pursue perjury charges against the Border Patrol agent. We reached out to ICE for comment on Estrella's case, but did not receive a response. A representative from the El Paso Office of Customs and Border Patrol did respond to my request for comment, and he directed us to the original ICE press release, adding that he did not know if any disciplinary measures were taken against the agents.
But there's more to the story of why federal agents were interested in Estrella. The officers who approached Estrella in the courthouse that day were part of an ICE task force called BEST, which uses multiple agencies to investigate multinational crimes.
A month after her arrest, in March of 2017, the state of Texas filed criminal charges against both Estrella and her ex-boyfriend, Mario. The criminal charges claim that Estrella and Mario stole mail from post office boxes and cashed checks with other people's money, which is a federal offense.
By now, it's probably clear that Estrella Gonzalez is a complicated person. She arrived in the U.S. without documentation. She's charged with fraud and forgery, and her accused accomplice was also her abuser.
Not long after that day in the courthouse, Estrella was charged with 239 forgery counts, among other offenses. At her lawyer's urging, she took a plea deal and is now serving a 9-year sentence, hence why we meet Estrella in prison. After she serves her sentence, she faces deportation.
With a braided ponytail and in shackles, Gonzalez told Judge Montalvo in Spanish, "I would like to apologize for breaking the law of the United States, and I'd like to ask you for the opportunity to start my own life in my country."
There are a number of unanswered questions in her case. It's still unclear why the federal agents provided false information about where they approached Estrella that day at the courthouse. Maybe it is, as public statements suggest, a simple clerical error. But then why such a detailed description of the sequence of events? And who informed federal agents of her presence there?
There's a third version of what happened that day. Estrella's. She knows why the agents were staked out in that courtroom that day. It's because of Mario. He had kept his word, she said. He always told her he would call ICE to come and get her.
Mario había cumplido su palabra. Mario había cumplido sus amenazas. Si me dejas, te echo la migra. Si no firmas los cheques, yo te echo la migra.
If you leave me, I'll turn you into ice, he'd tell her. If you don't sign the checks, I'll turn you into ice. I ask Estrella.
So you are convinced that Mario was the one who called immigration?
No necesitaba comprobarlo. Por favor. Yo sé que era él.
Estrella says she doesn't need proof. Who else could it have been? Even if they say 1,000 people did it, she says, I know it was him. When we meet Estrella again, she's serving her sentence at a men's prison in far West Texas.
They cut her hair. She's been in solitary confinement since she arrived. She says the prison has refused to provide her with hormone treatments as part of her transition.
Come on. Estoy pagando doble sentencia. Una, el delito que cometí. Dos, por ser mujer trans.
Estrella says she feels like she's serving two sentences. One for the crimes she's committed, and one for being a trans woman. That, she says, is her story.
Soy una mujer trans. Esa es mi historia. Soy una mujer trans. Así defino. Mi historia es mujer trans.
I'm a trans woman, says Estrella. I am who I am. And no law or society can take that away from her.
To Estrella, it seems, this story is about her, about finding herself, about feeling safe to be who she is. But to those following her case, it's about a lot of other things, too. Because, like we said before, Estrella is complicated, and her story asks some complicated questions. What are the rules of engagement when an undocumented person is also a criminal? And in Estrella's case, what if that criminal is also a victim?
Once Estrella has finished serving her sentence, she'll have to face deportation proceedings. So I ask her, what does she look forward to now?
¿Sabes el sueño más grande de mi vida que ha sido ahorita que es un día asistir al desfile gay?
Estrella says she hopes to find a way to stay in the U.S. after she has served her sentence. Her big dream? She wants to march in the Pride Parade in New York City as a free woman. Since Estrella's apprehension, ICE has updated its policy about courthouses. In January of this year, ICE issued a directive that explicitly cites courthouses as one of the areas where ICE agents are free to apprehend people. The new policy also encourages ICE officers to conduct their business discreetly and to avoid detentions in family or civil court. We don't know whether or not Estrella's case influenced this change in policy, but she does remain the most high-profile incident of a courthouse apprehension in recent history. In the first year of the Trump administration, ICE detentions have increased by over 40%. As for Estrella, we checked in with her immigration attorney, who tells us that she's been moved to yet another prison, where she's in an LGBT unit, where she's no longer in solitary, and we've been told she is receiving some hormone treatment. She's also applied for a U visa, a special visa for victims of crimes, and Estrella hopes that this will help her stay in the United States after she serves her criminal sentence. This story was reported by myself and Jonathan Hirsch. It was edited by Nadia Raymond and Marlon Bishop. Latino USA is produced by Fernanda Chavarri, Andres Caballero, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, Janice Yamoka, and Sayer Quevedo. Our engineers are Jeannie Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Our fellows are Maya Cueva and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our intern is Reese Williams. Our senior production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Fact-checking this week by Zoe Malik. Special thanks this week to Joanne DeLuna. If you like the music that you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time, and in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Hasta la próxima.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first. Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at www.hsfoundation.org. And Carnegie Corporation, promoting the advancement of knowledge and understanding.
You're perfect. You're just like cruising in there. No, I think it's good. It's like that.
Oh, yeah, it's sounding like a bromance.
Yeah.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, Latino students are enrolling in college at higher rates than ever before, but many of them aren't finishing college.
Sophomore year, like, I was almost close to failing anatomy, which was kind of devastating for me because that's kind of what my career is primarily like based on, knowing what the human body does.
That's next time on Latino USA.
What's unique about the human experience, and what do we all have in common? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on TED Radio Hour, we go on a journey through the big ideas, emotions, and discoveries that fill all of us with wonder. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.